Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. Hoo-wah! I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. I hope it's very, very obvious that the election this November is very, very important for the future of our nation. I try not to get political on this show, but I do sometimes. When you vote next, not just for president, for Congress, creators, and senators, and your state and local officials, check them out before you vote for them. See if their actions match their words. As my mother used to tell me when I was trying to get her to let me do something, your actions speak so loud I can't hear what you're saying. We know much about what Trump will do because he did it for 4 years he was president. Our nation was much better off then than it is now. Do vote for people who will get the things done that you want done that will be good for our nation. Okay, joining me at the 50 caliber microphone today is Marine vet Skip Coriel. Is it hunting season yet, Skip?
Well, Colonel, for most people, it's not hunting season, but I am fortunate enough to have a really nice neighbor, a farmer who's got about 1,000 acres, and he gets special permits to help control the deer herd. So for me, August is good hunting season. Last August, I shot 4 deer, and now we ate them all. So now I need to go out and shoot more. And I'm just enjoying it. I love hunting in 80 degree weather.
I hear what you're saying, bro. I hear that. Here's what we have for you today. A news and comments by the Colonel. I'm going to discuss the military challenges and opportunities in the Arctic. Then Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby will contribute his warrant wisdom. Leela Gilbert, who's lived there before, will discuss Israel. Vietnam vet J.C. Handy will discuss his book on being at war. Then we'll interview the Naval Academy's football coach about the upcoming season. And Diane Raver will present the movie of the month.
Hey, troops, please invite your friends to join us at this time on this great radio station. Then head on out to frontlinesoffreedom.com and sign up for our free e-newsletter. And join the conversation at facebook.com/frontlinesoffreedom.
We welcome your input to this show. Send us your ideas and comments through our website, frontlinesoffreedom.com, or by Facebook. And now it's time for news and comments by the Colonel on Frontlines of Freedom. Naturally, we'll start with the news. Take us there, Skip.
Well, Colonel, as Israel continues to brace under the threat of an imminent attack from Iran or its proxies, including Hamas and Hezbollah, security experts are warning that Tehran has its sights set on Jordan as its next great terror front. Jordan is the last holdout. Benham Ben Taleblu, Iran expert and senior fellow with the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, said, "It's the last bastion of the pro-Western or status quo order in the heartland of the northern part of the Middle East." The security expert pointed to Iran's growing influence and support for proxy fighters not only in Gaza, Syria, Iraq, and Lebanon, but further across the Arabian Peninsula, including Yemen and Oman, where anti-Israel sentiment is on the rise.
Iran has made it clear that destroying Israel is its number one goal. And we're somewhere on their target list, too. And they're only successful at what they're doing because we let them get rich so they can afford to do all this evil. We need a leader who will focus on shutting them down.
And negotiations resumed over a Gaza ceasefire and hostage release deal, framed by our nation's officials as a final stage bid to end the conflict, as health authorities claim the Palestinian death toll in Gaza has passed 40,000. CIA Director William Burns and White House Middle East Coordinator Brett McGurk joined Israeli officials as well as mediating partners from Egypt and Qatar for fresh talks in Doha aimed at ending the conflict and bringing Israel's hostages home. Hamas representatives weren't there, a member of the group's diplomatic team confirmed after its lead negotiator, Ismail Haniya, was assassinated during a trip to Tehran last month. Israel hasn't formally confirmed nor denied its role in the killing, though it privately told our officials they did. Regional tensions loom large over this new round of diplomacy as Iran and Hezbollah, the Lebanese militant group and political party, have vowed to strike Israel in retaliation for Haniya's slaying, as well as that of top Hezbollah commander Fuad Shakur. But there were indications that resumed peace talks could delay new attacks from across the Lebanese border.
If there are peace talks, they mean nothing as Iran and all its agents will continue to attack Israel. All a period of peace does is give the terrorist groups time to rearm and recruit more terrorists. Oh, and why aren't we worried about our hostages?
And speaking of Hezbollah, they published a new threatening video showcasing the terror army's vast network of underground tunnels, an effective city beneath Lebanon that houses just some of the terror group's weapons. The four-minute video shows terrorists on motorbikes driving throughout the tunnel network, along with a caravan of trucks loaded with missiles. The narrator, translated from Arabic into both English and Hebrew, threatens that the Iran-backed terror group can launch precision and non-precision missiles throughout all of Israel. Quote, Israel will face a destiny and reality it didn't expect any day, from the Lebanese border to the Jordanian border, to the Red Sea, to Kiryat Shmona, to Eilat, unquote. With Hezbollah threatening a massive attack and an Iranian strike on Israel still looming, Israelis in the north are bracing for an assault. In Haifa, residents are preparing for rockets and missiles hitting the city's industrial infrastructure and oil refineries, causing explosions like the 2022 Beirut port explosion that killed 220 people.
And what's Israel's sin that all these people want to punish? They want to live in peace in their land, a land where Muslims are welcome and are even in their government. Yuck.
As our nation continues its rush to shutter our remaining coal plants, energy analysts are debating what should fill the gap to meet the growing need for electricity. Increasingly, many are pointing to nuclear energy as the solution. According to the Department of Energy, nearly one-third of our existing coal plants are scheduled to be shut down by 2035. This is happening as demand from data centers, electric vehicles, electric home heating, and other products are pushing ever more consumption onto the grid. A regulatory agency charged with assessing grid reliability stated that its key measures of electricity peak demand are rising faster than at any time in the past 5 or more years.
This coming extreme shortage of power is going to destroy our military as well as our nation. Despite all the unproven claims, coal does not hurt our nation or the world, and there is lots of evidence to prove that. But our current government wants to end all the jobs in the coal and energy industry, but they have no idea how to replace the energy. Yet the coal plants are preparing to shut down. This is stupid.
And the Secret Service is investigating a report that one of their agents left her post to breastfeed during a recent Trump campaign event.
Hey, I have no problem with women being able to breastfeed their children, but women with that need should not be in a position of protection, and that includes in our military.
And Russia is scrambling to shore up its defenses weeks into Ukraine's lightning attack across the border on the southern Kursk region. Our officials said that Russia has diverted thousands of troops from occupied territory inside Ukraine to counter the threat. Russian President Putin has had to bring in conscripts, backpedaling on a promise he made not to use them on the front line. A sizable trench has been dug across the countryside, about 28 miles from the border, in Kursk, satellite imagery showed. Experts told CNN that Ukraine's bold gambit to breach Russia's border, planned in complete secrecy, had stunned even Kiev's closest allies, including us, shifting the playing field of this more than two-year-old war. It's clear that Ukraine can pull off such a secretive and significant operation successfully. They can penetrate Russian territory, and they're still very much committed to fight for their country. They're not experiencing war fatigue, and they're willing to take extreme measures for the sake of defending their country, said British security expert Nacia Seskiria.
Hey, what can I say? Go Ukraine! And that's the news. As Americans, it's our responsibility to ensure that our nation is well-run and on the right path. Politics and politicians can be confusing. We can work together. Concerned Veterans for America can assist you, even if you're not a veteran, in getting involved and getting our nation back on track. Working with them is one of the things I do. Check CVAFrontlines.com. That's CVAFrontlines.com. This is Colonel Denny Gillum coming up on Frontlines of Freedom. I'll share comments by the Colonel, then we'll enjoy some warrant wisdom. Then we'll discuss the situation in Israel with Leila Gilbert. At ease, troops, take a break. Silver has increased 24% over the past 15 months and is a solid financial investment. Silver is projected to continue its rise and is nowhere near its 2011 high of $49 an ounce. So there's still a lot of room for investment growth. Call 800-UCB-GOLD or go to their website at universalcoin.com/Denny. That's universalcoin.com/Denny.
This is Marine Vet Skip Coria with your home defense tip of the week. Always keep your guns locked up and safe from unauthorized users, especially your children. Inside your home, you should be able to get to your gun within 5 seconds of sensing danger. To accomplish this, stage a secure and loaded firearm on each level of your home. Above all else, never leave loaded guns unattended where children can gain access. This is just one more way to keep your family safe. For more useful tips on home and personal defense, visit homedefenseshow.com.
HelpVet.net is a national help center helping the military community with all of your everyday needs. Whether you need a realtor, an attorney, health-related services, or information on retirement planning, financial resources, or more, our vast network of hand-picked qualified service providers are waiting to help you. With up-to-date military news and resources, you can find answers to all of your daily needs at HelpVet.net. HelpVet.net wants to thank you for your service, and may God continue to bless the U.S. of A.
Do you have a story inside you yearning to come out? As a self-published author, you are free to creatively distribute your book online or using your own professional connections. White Feather Press will publish your manuscript and set up online distribution, allowing the author to retain all copyright and distribution rights as well as all profits. Check out White Feather Press at publishyourdream.com. White Feather Press, reaffirming faith in God, family, and country. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. It is 20 minutes after the hour, and you are in formation and listening to the front lines of freedom all across America. Troops, even if our economy wasn't in a mess with inflation going crazy and prices up out of sight, I'd still recommend that you do some investing in precious metals, gold and silver. I encourage you to join me in purchasing these solid investments from Universal Coin. Find them at universalcoin.com/Denny. That's universalcoin.com/Denny. Now it's time for comments by the Colonel. My topic today is the Arctic, the area around the North Pole. Our nation's Arctic state is, of course, Alaska. During the 18th century, Alaska was colonized by Russia. Russia sold Alaska to us in 1867. Alaska became a state in January 1959, so it's been a part of our nation for over 150 years. Surprisingly, we've paid very little attention to the Arctic during that time. Around 12 years ago, I interviewed the commandant of our Coast Guard on this show. One of the things that came up was that our nation had only one functional seagoing icebreaker. There are officially two, but one is used for parts to keep the other one functional. We have a good number of freshwater icebreakers that work in the Great Lakes and rivers. He told me that one of the main roles of our one seagoing icebreaker was to support our research efforts in Antarctica, around the South Pole. He mentioned that should that icebreaker ever get stuck in the ice, our only option was to ask Russia for help because they have lots of such ships. My assumption was that our national leadership simply saw no need or advantage to focus on the Arctic, but that's changed. Pentagon leadership has unveiled its latest strategy for the Arctic region as competition for the geopolitical advantage heats up with, yes, China and Russia. The focus is the increasing militarization of the region by both countries amid the expanding race for natural resources. The Arctic is strategically vital to our security, Deputy Defense Secretary Kathleen Hicks said during a briefing. She added that our national security demands that we ensure that the Arctic remains a secure and stable region in the face of increasing aggression throughout the world. Our military will now adopt a monitor and respond approach while exercising our presence in the region by coordinating with Arctic allies on strategy, training, and equipment. She described the strategy as a part of a whole government effort to round out our deterrence and readiness in the Arctic through regular training and exercises with allies, as well as investments in new systems, space capabilities, and cold weather gear. Among the efforts outlined is modernization of the North American Aerospace Defense Command, through which we in Canada respond to threats to North American airspace. This is the Pentagon's first update since 2019, and follows the National Arctic Strategy unveiled in 2022. Our objective is to maintain an Arctic that is peaceful, stable, prosperous, and cooperative while confronting Communist China's challenge to the region. The Arctic houses huge amounts of natural resources, including oil, natural gas, rare earth metals, diamonds, and pristine fishing grounds. For the past decade, China has increased its efforts to project itself into that region, in part to seize at least some of those resources for itself. China declared itself a, quote, near Arctic state, end quote, in 2012, whatever that means, although its nearest territory is some 900 miles from the Arctic. I guess this is to justify its movement into the area. China has more than doubled its investments in Arctic projects since then and is focusing on pursuing mineral extraction and scientific engagements. China is also attempting to create a new economic corridor through the region. The so-called Polar Silk Road would link Asia and Europe by traversing the opening waterways of the Arctic along Russia's northern coast, rather than going through the more densely patrolled Indo-Pacific. The subsequent flow of commercial, scientific, and military vessels into the region has increased, altering geographic and strategic reality that has long been seen as the only way to go. We've seen an uptick in cooperation between Russia and China over the past several years, said Deputy Secretary of Defense for Arctic and Global Resilience. We've also seen military exercises off the coast of Alaska by both nations. That both countries continue strategic cooperation is concerning, and it's very likely that China's scientific research in the Arctic would have military applications. So, as we plan our actions in the Arctic, it's imperative that our joint force is equipped and trained with what they need to succeed in the Arctic. Thus, we're investing in cold weather equipment, just as we had previously invested in specialized gear for employments in the Middle East. Foremost among those investments is the development and deployment of polar icebreaker ships, which are required to break through the softening ice of the Arctic trade routes in the summer months. These are seagoing icebreakers that we don't have. Yes, we have one functional ship, and I understand there's a contract to build one more modern one, but I don't know the status of that ship. Fortunately, our ally Finland maintains 12, and Canada has 9. Russia has about 30 diesel-powered and several nuclear-powered icebreakers. The White House announced in July that we would work with Canada and Finland to jointly build up their icebreaker fleets as they look to boost their defenses in the Arctic. The icebreaker collaborative effort, called the Ice Pact, will facilitate cooperation in providing polar icebreakers and enhance information sharing. It will also allow allied workers and experts from each country to train in shipyards across all three. The Ice Pact is described as yet another example of the type of cooperation we can leverage. It's about making sure we're ready to execute missions there. We're late coming into the game, but I'm glad we're taking action now. We need polar icebreakers. The Arctic's resources will play a big role in our future. And those are my comments for today. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. You're listening to Frontlines of Freedom, and now we get to enjoy some war and wisdom with Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. What do you have to share this week, Roland?
You know, back in 2012, the Air Force stopped requiring recruits to carry rifles as part of their daily regiment while in basic training. Weapons training was still very much part of their curriculum. The trainees just didn't carry weapons at all times. Well, that changed at the end of July, and all trainees are now carrying inert M4 rifles marked with distinctive red flash suppressors. The Air Force trainees received the inert weapons following an initial intro to weapons course during the first week of training. From the moment they're issued their M4 rifles, the weapons are by their sides nearly every step of the way through the remaining 7 weeks of basic training. Of course, there's a few exceptions, such as during medical appointments or while wearing their dress blue service uniforms. Now, after carrying and maintaining their weapons for weeks, the trainees attend a full combat arms training day of 4 to 5 hours in the classroom and 3 hours on the range. Here, they learn how to safely react to malfunctions and fire the weapons while wearing a gas mask and chemical gear. Previously, Air Force trainees used a modified version of the M16 rifle during training. Unlike standard blue trainers made fully out of plastic, the rifles were essentially demilitarized versions with a blue stock and a handguard. these new Inter M4 rifles are more aligned to the equipment they would actually be carrying in the field. The Air Force has also changed their combat training to a scenario-based deployment exercise in the 7th week of training to better prepare airmen for future potential conflicts. You know, it's good to see the Air Force making changes to training that are based on combat needs and not political things such as gender for a change. For Frontlines of Freedom, I'm Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. Back to you, Colonel.
Straight ahead on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll discuss Israel with an American lady who's lived in Israel, Leela Gilbert. Then J.C. Handy will present his book on the Vietnam War. All this is coming up. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. You're standing tall with the Frontlines of Freedom. I'll be right back. Troops, it's time for sit-ups. Do 50, then stand at ease.
From ensuring veterans get the care they deserve, to ending our nation's endless wars, to targeting out-of-control spending, Concerned Veterans for America is taking on the most important issues facing America.
You can help CVA shape a better future for Americans everywhere. Visit CVAFrontlines.com to learn more and join the movement. That's CVAFrontlines.com.
Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code. Troops, welcome back to our nation's largest military veteran talk radio show, Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum, and troops, please do send me your comments and questions. Email me through frontlinesoffreedom.com. It's an honor to welcome back to the show Leela Gilbert. Leela lived in Israel for quite a while and focuses on foreign affairs. She knows what she's talking about. So welcome back, Leela. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you for inviting me.
Leela, begin by giving us a little of your background, especially as it relates to Israel.
Yes, thank you. Well, I was sort of in love with Israel all my life. I grew up in a family that respected Israel, particularly my father. And so I was curious to go visit the place. And so in 2006, I went over there and I ended up staying 10 years and had a very wonderful time making new friends and really getting a sense of the place. But also, it just became a second home to me. I came back in 2017.
Okay. So you still have friends there and contacts and...
Oh, yeah. More than here. I don't know.
Well, I've been to Israel, and at no time did I sense any feeling that they were just good, normal people. I keep hearing that they're supposed to be an occupying force or something. I think they're just peaceful citizens of all faiths who are trying to live in peace in their nation. Does that make sense to you?
Oh, of course. And they're really a people that left a lot of other places so they could live in peace with their own people of faith. And it's never quite worked out as calmly as I think they like it to. But yes, they're wonderful people. I have as many friends there as I do here. And I had a great time. I never really sensed any problem with the fact that I was a Christian and they were Jews mostly. Some were religious, some weren't. But there was never any conflict. We just all got to be very close and remain so to this day.
Well, as I recollect, when Israel was founded, what is it, 50 years or 60, 70 years ago, that Jews in other surrounding nations were run out of their nations into Israel.
So, That's true.
But it was no Israeli army marched in and grabbed this turf and though you'd think that was the case from what people say, and that just simply wasn't true. Okay. It's clear that at least Iran and Hezbollah are planning a major attack. And the people sort of used to that happening on occasion. What's your perspective? What's going on?
Well, there are a couple of things going on at the same time. The situation with Hamas in Gaza has cooled off a bit, but there's still Israeli military is still in there, and it flares up occasionally. It's not as intense as it was, but now the northern border between Israel and Lebanon, Hezbollah is, as of today, I think there were 50 or 60 rockets fired into Israel. So it's heating up. It's been going on up there for a long time, but it seems like there's more aggression now than there was maybe a month ago.
Well, but Hamas and Hezbollah shooting rockets into Israel, that's not new, is it? I mean, has there ever been a time when that didn't happen occasionally?
Well, it happens occasionally, but it seems a bit more focused, particularly, you know, since all the uproar after October 7th. There's been a lot of conflict with Gaza, with Hamas, and Hezbollah has, it seems to me, they've increased their aggression in the north recently. And I think I saw something like 75 rockets were fired in. Maybe I got the number wrong as of the last 24, 48 hours. So there's conflict, but there doesn't seem to be a lot of fatality. It's kind of a weird conflict. There's a lot of evacuation in the north of Israel. A lot of people have left and been gone for months. So it's not as vulnerable now, unfortunately, that there's nobody in some of that area.
Well, in the couple of times that I've been in Israel, there never was any kind of rocket attack. So the people sort of know how to live with it, but obviously they're smart enough to know that if something's going to get intensive, going somewhere else might be a good idea.
Well, there are tens of thousands that have evacuated the northern border, I think, in the last few months. Not few months, maybe the last nearly a year for some. So it's been bad up there for a long time. I was there just about a year ago, and it kind of fell apart not long after I was up there. I was just right along the border. I didn't go into Lebanon, but I went with someone that knew his way around that went right across the border there. So it's deteriorated somewhat, and or quite a bit, actually. So I don't really know what the intention is, if it's just, you know, harassment or if there's an aggressive intention. I don't know what's going on with Hezbollah, but they're always creating grief for the Israelis, certainly along the border. Tens of thousands have evacuated up there.
Uh-huh. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Front Lines of Freedom. We're talking with Leila Gilbert. When I was there last, I spent some time with their military. I've been on the border, but there was no hostility there. I guess I've never lived in an environment where there were some people right across the border in almost any direction that hate me. That's something that most people couldn't relate to, I think. But as you say, off and on, it's been going on from the beginning, right?
Well, yeah, because I don't think there was ever a welcome mat rolled out for Israel to become a nation by the surrounding countries. There's always been tension. And of course, their military gifts and prowess have made them more comfortable there. But there's always some group or some country that's created grief. So it's not really that wonderful. They have become strong enough to defend themselves, as we all know, but it still doesn't mean there's peace all the time, every day.
Yeah, and that's what most people, and particularly most Americans, are used to. And yet at the same time, with all this going on, Israel's incredibly productive. They've created a bunch of stuff. They're producing all kinds of things. It's a very productive country, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. And not only in production, but also in research, in medicine, in all kinds of scientific areas. It's a brilliant and innovative country, and it continues to be in spite of all of the conflict that comes and goes.
And through all this, Israel's got enough people to man their military, though most people in the military are in the reserves, but at times like this, they get called up. And they also, the industry and just taking care of family and things like that, they've got to be a very flexible, intelligent people just to tolerate that, right?
Yes, and it's not easy right now. I've been in touch with some friends there, and you know, the sons don't know if they're about to be deployed. They have jobs. you know, some of them are having problems with their jobs because they've had to leave a couple of times. So it's unstable right now, at least according to the people I'm talking to, which are a handful, but I think they probably represent the norm right now. It's unclear, and both problems in the north and along the Gaza border. I mean, everything is a little bit unsteady.
Well, I think that's a gentle way of putting it. And there's not a heck of a lot of question that Iran is behind all this. They're the source of the funding and weapons and all that kind of stuff. I guess I just have trouble relating to people who somehow identify themselves by who they hate. That's odd to me. And and I certainly didn't find that in Israel. Heck, they even have a Muslim political party and there are Muslims involved in their government, right?
Oh, that's correct. Yes, but well, Iran, you know, is particularly hateful toward Israel, and it's like an infection with their leadership. And so they're the ones that are instigating a lot of what goes on in their surrounding countries. And there's been talk recently of them actually invading Israel, although I haven't heard much about that in the last week or two, but there was some sort of threat in recent weeks. So I think they are the heart of the problem. Their ideology and their passion to destroy is leading a lot of other countries to either turn a blind eye or maybe help a little bit.
There's more to discuss about Israel, and Leela's going to stay with us. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's push-up time. I want you to do 103 push-ups. That's how many I do, well, used to do before I got into my 80s. Then take a break, but stay in the area. We'll be right back.
Unexpected situations do happen. Our nationwide network of self-defense attorneys is always ready to defend you in a criminal and/or civil case. There are zero attorney's fees for covered events and no hourly limits, caps, or deductibles. That means no matter how high your attorney's fees are, they're all covered through your low monthly membership payment. Join U.S. Law Shield today and receive immediate coverage, affordable, customizable membership options, and peace of mind.
Friends, Adam here, Patria Foods, U.S. only company. Frozen fruits and vegetables straight from our dirt, not overseas. Support the U.S. farmer. When you shop at patriafoods.com, we give back to a military family in need. We got to take care of each other, my friends. We have to. So important. 10% off patriafoods.com. 10% off promo code FREEDOM and shop today.
In business for over 30 years with over $1 billion in sales, Universal Coin and Bullion is my go-to source for gold and silver coins. And right now, they're offering our listeners a newly minted 0.99 fine 1 ounce 2024 silver American Eagle coin for just $27. Call 800-UCB-GOLD, 800-UCB-GOLD, or go to their website at universalcoin.com/Denny. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. This is the final formation for this hour on Frontlines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation with Leela Gilbert about Israel. So neither one of us can predict anything that Iran will do because they're just, you know, the Iranian people, as near as I can tell from my studies, are not hostile to Israel. It's the Iranian government, which is mostly in their faith, but not even everybody of their faith is hostile to Israel, but the government is, and who knows what they're going to do next. Is that consistent with what you've heard?
Yes, that's right. In fact, there's been real rumblings of attacks. There was, I think, in the last couple of weeks, rumor that they were going to invade. And then I don't know what happened after that because it was probably a lot of hot air. But yeah, they're very, very hostile. And, you know, there was that whole uproar last year where, you know, the Americans had to actually help defend Israel in the north for a while and other countries as well, because there were some rockets fired and so forth. So, they have it on their calendar that that's one of the things they have to do before their religious obligations are complete or whatever it is.
Well, yes. And Israel, they call the little Satan, but the United States is the big Satan, aren't we?
Oh, yeah. And they could be right about that in some parts of this country. But no, I'm kidding. But yes, we are the big Satan or the great Satan, and Israel's the little Satan. But we're, you know, in their eyes, one is as bad as the other, and they can't do much to us. So they kind of can go after the local neighborhood.
Well, but with our open border, who knows how many Iranians and others we have in the country right now?
Good question. And a very disturbing one that we don't hear enough about, whether somebody's following up on that.
Yes, I sincerely hope they are. But the only place that I know that they're openly right now is in Chicago at the Democratic Convention. So,
well, let's not go there because I wouldn't be welcome and neither would you.
No, not going. Okay. The people in Israel, they just raise their own food. They have their own industries. When Israel was formally established, most recently at the end of World War II, the League of Nations recognized them as a recognized nation. When the UN was formed, it recognized Israel as an acceptable, regular nation. Yet there are people who say it's not. And most of the people are the people who hate it.
That's true. I think a lot of it's religious. You know, a lot of it has to do with radical Islam and the idea that that's a blot on the Islamic world because the surrounding countries are Muslim. So I think that's part of it. And also the resentment of such a successful and vibrant country in a pretty grim part of the world. I think there's a lot of jealousy and there's a lot of religious, you know, persecution mentality. So it's all that. Plus, you know, Israel's got the best military in the entire region. So, yeah, that's got to raise the hackles a bit, too.
Well, and it's the only democracy in the whole area.
Exactly. Exactly.
And if you or I were married and we were both committed Jews and we were living in the United States and we had three or four kids, two of them were girls, and we wanted to move back to the Middle East, but we wanted to go somewhere where our girls could grow up and become whatever they were able to achieve their goals. The only place we could move to is Israel, right?
Oh, yeah. The rest of the countries are pretty dominated by Islam, various forms of Islam, but not a culture that favors women or women's rights. That's for sure.
You know, so it gets goofy. On the other hand, if you grow up in a culture, that's your norm. And if you grow up, everybody hates Jews, you hate Jews. The culture you grow up in, unless you are somehow exposed in a reasonable way to something else, that's your reality, isn't it?
Well, that's true. And it's been that way for centuries with Israel. I mean, even in the Bible, you know, the Jews had their moments when they were all kicked out of their land, or there was a Jew. What was this? The story of Esther. You know, the whole Bible has these stories. It's nothing new, but it's very focused on politics and Islamist hatred now. And that's really the core of the threat to Israel.
And apparently, as we've hinted at, there seems to be a fair amount of that in the United States now. And I guess there's always been some, but there's a lot more, or at least it's more obvious now than it has been in my lifetime.
Well, the university campuses seem to breed this or be a haven for it. I haven't quite figured out why that is.
Well, I retired about 4 years ago from teaching at a college, and I often identified myself in the social science department as the token conservative. Mm. So many of my peers who were very good people seemed to like to find things that were wrong with America and wrong with our allies. That's certainly part of it.
Yeah. It's part of the anti-American mentality on campuses. That's true. And that's sort of intellectually sophisticated.
Yeah, that's true. On the other hand, I taught American government, and in 15 years of teaching, a question I would ask the first day of class, every class, why do we celebrate the 4th of July? And in 15 years, I had one student who knew. Many of them could say it was Independence Day, but so they didn't learn it in school or from home.
Mm-hmm.
And we need people that love our nation. I mean, it's a military, this is a military talk radio show. What kind of military people are we going to have if they don't love our nation and know enough about it to want to defend it? So that's an issue here in America, but our apparently Israel doesn't have that problem. There are people definitely love enough to fight for it.
They know they have to. They don't have any choice. We're a big country, and it's easy to get lazy about our defenses, at least what we understand about them, unless we're involved with military people. But there, everybody knows the danger.
Well, that's a very, very, you can't avoid it, you know, exactly. Unless you visit for the right 4 days sometime.
But, yeah, that's right.
Well, one of the things we Americans can and should do is pray for Israel. What else can we do?
Well, keep informed. I think one of the things that really makes it difficult to communicate about Israel to just ordinary, average people is that they don't know what's going on there. They don't know much about it. And I think it's really, I read the Israeli news every day. I do it because I live there and I want to know from them what's going on. But I think it'd be good for people to be more informed. There's English language information that can be read every day. Know what's going on there, why we're defending Israel. And it would really help to communicate that to kind of ignorant people that just think it's some kind of a weird group of foreigners. You know, I think that people are ill-informed about what's really the problem there and what the strength and the wonder of that country really is.
Well, yes, I agree with that. Leila, how can listeners stay in touch with you?
Well, I have my own website. I have Leila at leilagilbert.com, but I also am at Family Research Council, and I am involved in writing there and working with General Boykin, who I'm sure you know.
Yes.
I do some writing with him as well. So I'm both at FRC and I'm also have my own website.
Because you're a great person to be in touch with, if to just get the non-political, just the facts as you know them, and you know them because you stay in touch there. You're a great source, and I appreciate that.
Oh, well, I appreciate you. Thank you for including me in your broadcast.
Leila, thank you again for your excellent comments, for the many ways you serve our nation. God bless you. I'm just proud that we're friends and can stay in touch with each other.
Yeah, stay in touch with me. Thank you.
This concludes the first hour of the show. We'll start the second hour talking with J.C. Handy about his book and his role in Vietnam. Then we'll talk with a Navy football coach about the upcoming season, and Diane Raver will review the movie of the month. Of course, we'll conclude with the weekly mailbag, military history, and our self-defense report. You know, U.S. Law Shield is a part of the Front Lines of Freedom team. If you have weapons for self-defense, the defense of your family and yourself, and you ever need to use a legal weapon, you're going to need legal defense. U.S. Law Shield is the team my wife and I use. Check them out, uslawshield.com. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Front Lines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for pull-ups. Do 40 good ones, then maybe 20 more push-ups, then grab some protein, rehydrate with water, and finally, put a big smile on your proud-to-be-an-American face and send me your thoughts by email or on Facebook.